Thank you, Simon, and welcome back for the final round. We continue our discussions on primary financial statements, and I suppose I'm handing over to Lyra.
Thank you, Andreas. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Agenda Paper 21B, which provides staff analysis and recommendations in response to the feedback of the proposals in the exposure draft for classification of fair value gains or losses arising from derivatives and hedging instruments. This is to do with classification in the categories of the statement of profit or loss. In terms of feedback on the proposals, many respondents broadly agreed with them, subject to some aspects that they asked the board to reconsider. We provide the details of those aspects of feedback in paragraphs 12 to 19 of the paper. To address the feedback, we recommend the board makes two changes to its proposals for derivatives and hedging instruments. First, we recommend the board changes the default or residual category to be the operating instead of the investing category. Second, we recommend the board requires entities to classify gains or losses on derivatives related to financing activities in the financing category. This requirement would apply to those derivatives not used in the course of entities' main business activities. Otherwise, if they are part of the entity's main business activity, consistent with the proposal in the exposure draft, the gains or losses for those derivatives would continue to be classified in the operating category. In addition to these two changes compared to the proposals in the exposure draft, as explained in paragraphs 54 to 58 of the paper, we have identified some drafting suggestions that we will consider when preparing the final amendments to hopefully address some of the questions on derivatives used for risk management that are not designated in hedge accounting relationships. On page 21, we ask the board to discuss and vote on the approach for derivatives and hedging instruments. That's the classification approach. Within this approach, there are individual proposals that are tailored for each group of financial instruments in a way that seeks to identify circumstances where classification would faithfully represent the risks that the entity is managing with those financial instruments used for risk management. For derivatives that are not used for risk management, the approach aims to faithfully represent the purpose of holding those derivatives. The recommended approach also includes cost-benefit considerations. For example, it retains the relief provided in the exposure draft for situations where classification would involve undue cost or effort for derivatives used for risk management not designated in hedge accounting. Also, it is primarily with practical reasons in mind that we recommend the operating category to be the default category for remaining derivatives not used for risk management. With that, I'll hand over to the board for discussion and vote on question in page 21 of the paper.
Thank you, Lyra. As with the other papers, could I first invite board members to put forward any comments, remarks, concerns, suggestions? Jianqiao, please.
Thanks, Andreas. Thank you the staff for bringing this paper and to address those concerns raised by some stakeholders. I generally disagree with, you know, replacing the investing category as the. Oh, sorry. Yeah, replacing the investing category with the operating category as the default category. I agree with requiring entity to classify gains or losses on derivatives that's related to financing activity and also not used in the course of entity's main business activities in the financing category. It's I think it's consistent with other decision we have made. With the so-called default category, I feel that just a couple of comments. First, I think we should be very careful to use the to expand the scope of using defaulting category of operating category. Although we introduce the operating profit using the default approach, I still hope that the items including operating profit would mainly reflect the profits or loss, including gain and loss of arising from main business activities. So once we change this notion, I worry about some derivative related activities. But again, and the loss arising from those derivative related activities would be included in the operating profit. And they may not be arising mainly from main business activities. Secondly, for specific reasons, for example, for those hedging instruments, when it would involving gross up of gain and losses. One of the reasons we try to we changed the default category from investing category to operating category. One of the reasons we try to reduce the accounting mismatch. Understand that because for some circumstances, those hedging instruments could affect operating category. But we also should be aware that not only affecting operating category, but also affecting, financing or maybe investing category. And I still support the basis we developed in the exposure draft. Because in those scenarios, because actually it's difficult to determine which category should be allocated. So therefore, the board previously decided to introduce to increase those gain and loss arising from hedging instruments to in the investing category. And the underlying concept is that I think we should look at whether the nature of those derivatives. I still believe that those derivatives generally, align with the definition of income and investment income and expenses, which we defined previously in the exposure draft. That means those derivatives generate a return individually and largely independently of entities' other resources. Particularly for those non-designated derivatives, regardless whether they're used for, risk management or those derivatives used not for risk management, I think they are more close to the definition of investment income and expenses rather than operating profit, although we did not define the directly of the operating profit. So with those reasons, I still think that the basis of exposure draft still valid. I think we should be careful to replace, investing category with operating category as the default category, and try to avoid to open too much of the operating category. Yeah, if other category could be fitted in, I still hope that particularly in relation to the gain and loss arising from derivatives. Obviously, if the company's main business activity is derivative-related trading activities, no problem to account for those, gain and losses arising from derivative in the operating profits. But if that is not their business main business activities, I believe that including in investing category is better than including them in the operating category. Thank you.
Thank you, Jinzhao. Sue, please.
Thanks, Andreas. I agree with the staff's recommendations. There's a few things I like in particular about it. I like the ideas that we're carrying on from the exposure draft about the hedging and also the risk management. I think that creates a good opportunity for people to explain what things are about. I like the extension of the notion to now make sure that derivatives that are related to financing end up in the financing section. I think that will be important for some instruments that people issue that happen to have derivatives that are treated in this way. And also given the way that we've constructed the overall structure of the income statement, where financing has a very particular meaning, investing has a very particular meaning, and operating is the residual and includes things from your main business activities, I think it actually follows quite well to have the default being the operating category for other derivatives. It makes the operating profit measure more comprehensive, which I think is sort of where we land. And also, in other discussions, we've had feedback about people being, you know, making the point that the investing category is sort of an exception. It's not that commonly used. And I think it sort of follows from that, that an operating category is a better default for derivatives than the investing category. So I agree with the recommendations.
Thank you, Sue. Over to you, Bertrand.
Yes, I also agree with the staff analysis and recommendation. My comment is just about saying that, however, this may have some impacts. So just if you have hadn't realized that it may have an impact for some preparers, not for all, of course. And I think that basically today it depends whether they present their P&L by function of expense. Well, in this instance, I understand that there won't be any impact at all. Or by nature of expense, whereby either for FX and in a sense for some part of hedging, they may consider FX expenses or income and hedging related to that, or hedging more generally within the financing expense. So effectively saying that there will be an impact for those. So not for the companies or the preparers that that are used to present a by function of expense P&L, because they are already disaggregating hedging and FX depending on the underlying nature of, or nature, I shouldn't say nature, but the underlying of the balance sheet items that it relates to. But for those at least, or some of those that today present a P&L by nature of expenses.
Thank you, Bertrand. Tadeo?
Thank you, Andreas. I support the staff's recommendation, but I would like to reemphasize, as I also mentioned for the previous paper, some feedback that is not always clear, the level of documentation, especially for instruments used for risk management. I saw the staff's response, but actually I expect that the final text incorporates wording such as the one that we have in paragraph 56, reasonable and supportable information to determine the link. I think that would be reasonable to expect this in the standard, not only in the base for conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeo. Mary, please.
Also wanted to weigh in supporting the staff recommendations, and in particular, kind of walk through my thinking on the switch to operating as the default category. I think that is the right thing, and maybe building on something Sue was saying, our basic approach with respect to classification is that things, in essence, move out of operating only when they meet the definitions that we have set up for financing and investing. And in this case, we pulled out, you know, derivatives that are used in hedge accounting, so they're not part of the subject to default. We've also pulled out derivatives that are used for risk management, even if they are not used, you know, even if they are not designated for hedge accounting. And now with the staff's other recommendation, we have also pulled out derivatives related to financing activities. So I think the pool of items that is left is appropriately considered as part of operating. I don't see it as a distortion or noise in that category. So am supportive of that staff proposal to make a change. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Bruce, please.
Thanks very much. So I'm mostly in support of where we are. I mean, so if I kind of take my way through kind of the thinking, for those we're using for risk management, I agree. I think the move to operating, I can see and I can follow that logic. I also very much support the fact that we're saying for the non-designated derivatives that we're using in for risk management. I mean, let's not over-engineer that. I kind of got a little bit worried when I saw we were talking about documentation and things. I'm glad with the place we got to. I think we don't really need to go too far on that, so I'm strongly in support of that. The only place where I'm kind of, I don't know if I disagree, but it kind of was counterintuitive to me was the last one. We've got those that are not used for risk management. I kind of personally, when I read the initial proposal, I mean, investing made sense to me because I kind of sat there and thought to myself, why would we put that? You know, where would I put, well, why would I hold these and where would I have put that if I thought about it? I'm not using them for risk management. I've bought these derivatives that to me kind of, they're not part of my normal operations. They're not being used in the financing. I don't know. To me, when I looked at that, I kind of felt that intuitively those felt to me more that they were more of an investing category than an operating category. Just on those ones. I mean, I've read through the arguments in the paper and I can kind of see where we got to. And I think when we look at, where's the paragraph that I was thinking of? I can see that it does make sense that, yes, we've set up the operating and maybe it's come back to what was said earlier around how we've got the definitions of the different categories. And I guess what it does fit nicely in operating because you're right, it's a residual at the end of the day, residual category. And then I know it sounds strange, I don't have to think too hard about whether it gets into one of the other ones because I can just default to the operating. So I could probably live with it. I'm just saying for me, initially, it was counterintuitive. And I guess if it's only me, I'd probably still live with it in operating, but we'd be interested in knowing if anybody else felt that was a bit of a challenge. Thank you.
Well, you heard Jinjao before, who probably is a compatriot with you on that one. Tom, please.
Yeah, so I'm in support of the staff recommendations, but I have some antenna going off that I have some residual kind of concerns that I just want to enunciate what they are so that if they do turn up, that we'll at least have thought about it, hopefully. So I know operating consists of main business activities plus residual items that don't fit in investing or financing conceptually. So it's got both. And I think one of the things I really like about this is that if we put it in operating, I think entities will have an incentive to only use undue cost or effort with the greatest care. So I think we'll actually get the result that we like most is that entities will actually track the things to the category that which they belong as much as possible. So I think that's a very positive outcome. My three concerns that I'll just raise though, during our feedback, and we discussed this a bit last week, there were suggestions that investing be folded into financing. And we decided against this. However, this will further reduce the already ever-shrinking investing category, making its existence a little less palatable, I think, to many people. And so I think that's something to think about. Secondly, I think for derivatives that are not used for risk management purposes, that is, the entity is wishing, has some information, wishes to trade on, with the expectation of earning an economic return, I think they meet the investing definition. They are probably outside of the operating main business activities, I think, fairly clearly. That said, I think they're sufficiently rare that pragmatically just folding them in with all the other derivatives and putting them in operating is okay, but some people may still come back. And then the third one, which is I think the biggest one, is my understanding when people looked at current practice was that many entities attempt to do what we're proposing, that they're trying to basically trace these things to where the risk is being managed. However, my understanding is those that tend to put them all in one place, and there's a significant subset of entities that do this, tend to put it in a financing category. They don't put it in operating. I think this is a fairly strong signal as to their preference, what they're doing now voluntarily on their own. And I think we're going to hear concerns from these entities if we go ahead with this, and we need to be prepared to defend what we do. In general, I think entities that currently have an operating category tend to try and pull volatility out of operating. This will inject some volatility into operating. Again, I think we may see people objecting to that. And again, I think for those respondents who had argued for an operating category that really was going to be fundamentally main business, this sort of expands the residual element. And again, I think those people may be less happy with what we're doing. So I'm going to support this because I think it's probably the best pragmatic outcome. But I expect to see, I think, some significant opposition, especially from those people who think that this belongs in something in financing and really don't want to see us bringing additional volatility into operating.
Thank you, Tom. Rika.
Thank you. I agree with what Tom just said. I think what staff recommended here is kind of the best pragmatic outcome in response to the practical concern about cases when it would involve grossing up or gains or losses. I think having said that, I want staff to be cautious about drafting some words like paragraph 33C. I think please don't provide the stakeholder with the impression that we make the more than best use of default approach to define the operating category and operating profit. I think this is a kind of the natural thing, and these naturally fit into operating categories following our thought process of default approach. I don't disagree with that point, but still, how to express and include in drafting, please be cautious about some stakeholders to have a strong opinion about how to define the operating profit.
Thank you, Rika. Bertrand again.
No, just to say to Bruce that I can't disagree with his comments, and I think it will echo Rika's one at the moment. If the board had decided previously to define positively operating, then of course Bruce's point is totally accurate, and maybe we wouldn't have ended up with those elements into the operating category. But as Sue pointed out, the board decided to define the operating category as a default category, then I think anything needs that defaults, in a sense, needs to be there. I perfectly understand your point, Bruce. And Rick has one at the moment.
Okay. Lira, do you want to come in now, or is it okay if we have Zach first? Yeah, okay, Zach, please.
So I actually just wanted to come in and actually support Bruce's statement. In reading through it, there were some give and takes on the first couple categories, but I could see defaulting to the operating category. When I looked at the reasons the respondents gave for not liking the investing category for derivatives not used in risk management, they seemed very conceptual, and I'm going to be a very pragmatic user here. I don't view derivatives as investments. I view them as levered investments. So yes, you can point to a definition that doesn't include them, but in looking at the substance of the transaction, it really strikes me as an investment if it's not used in the course of risk management. So I realize there'll be some exceptions there, but if we were to go with a category, I could fully support maintaining the investing category as the default for that particular one.
Okay. Thank you. Lira, please.
So just if helpful, because I think we had the same thinking process for this residual population. Is it Is it worth thinking more specifically? But during feedback and also field work, we understand there are entities that by internal policy are prohibited to actually hold derivatives that aren't used for risk management. And if we think, to Mary's point, we are already stripping out those used for risk management, those derivatives not used for risk management that are related to financing activities. And if we think this is really only going to affect entities that have these derivatives as part, not as part of their main business activities, I guess our thinking is that we are on talking about very, very limited population, if any.
Okay. I have two additional comments that I would just flag, and the team is already aware of those. The one point is that I think we ought to be a bit careful when it comes to talking about industries or not talking about industries, because some of the classification that I see in here may make sense or does make sense when applied to a certain set of entities, but may be more questionable in other circumstances. And tied to that is probably my second comment with regard to the table in paragraph 63, so just above the questions. All the comments that I've heard so far related to the derivatives, no one has commented on the non-derivative financial instruments. And I would just make a comment similar to the one that I've made before in terms of how does Treasury regard those instruments, and do they really follow our line of logic, which obviously is not targeted towards the finance function, but rather the accounting department? So if I say I do have a cash instrument that's not designated in a hedging relationship, yet it is used for risk management, this seems to me that there is an overlay happening here. And the question is, at which point is the overlay taking place? Is that taking place in the accounting department, where the accounting department says we are using that for for risk management, or is that taking place in the Treasury department? And the Treasury department probably doesn't care at all whether this is a cash instrument or whether it's the derivative or whether it's measured at amortized cost or at fair value or whatever, because the characteristics by which a Treasury function works and operates is cash inflows and cash outflows. So it may well be that what we are seeing here does make perfect sense from our conceptual point of view, but targeted towards accounting people. But I'm just wondering, or I was wondering, as to whether it does make sense to treat derivatives and non-derivatives differently in the section for used for risk management. That was a question that I have. I don't know how prevalent that is. I could see that in some instances being very, very frequent. Banks are of a different nature anyway. But even if I think of some very large corporates in my jurisdiction that don't have a banking license but operate in a similar way as a banking department, I could see this causing concerns, and this is why I'm just flagging it. I don't have an answer. I'm not determined saying this is wrong. I'm happy to support the staff recommendation. I just think that we ought to be a bit more careful when we say used for risk management, because that could allude to some saying I'm doing something as an overlay on a different level that's unrelated to the specific accounting requirements down below. Don't know whether I've made myself clear enough or not. Bertrand wanted to come in on this one.
Thanks, Andreas. That's a fair point you're raising. I would say I've just read very quickly again the table you were pointing out, and in a sense I would say For a treasury department, it will depend what is the purpose of the derivative or the cash instrument. What is the purpose of it? If it's to hedge for FX, a trade payable or a trade receivable, whether it's hedge accounting or economic hedging, let's put it that way, both the Treasury Departments and at least it's my experience, both the Treasury Departments and the accounting departments would follow and consider that within the operating category, I would say. So as far as I understood the staff paper, and as pointed out by Lyra, I think that the last category should be rather minimal, and I have no clear experience of this category, I must say. So maybe it could help if this category was a bit more illustrated in a way or another.
I'm not sure if it's helpful, but the way I understand the comments is it's a topic that the board had considered as part of developing the proposals in the exposure draft. In fact, in one of the paragraphs in its basis for conclusions, the board acknowledges that it had considered whether it will make whether it could apply the same approach to non-derivative hedging instruments also when you have a non-derivative instruments used for risk management. But the worry there was that often these instruments are used for multiple purposes, including a risk management purpose. And so in essence, if we were to require entities to treat them similar to a hedging instrument, we would be asking them to sort of deconstruct between the primary reason and secondary reason on which they are holding. And I think that the concern there was that it would lead to sort of significant judgment involved, because it will depend from case to case. And also it could increase complexity. And this is because it's different from derivatives, which we say if used for risk management, then treat them as hedging instruments, because derivatives in general are held for risk management purposes. So I think just to say that it was a consideration leading up to the exposure draft.
And I acknowledge that point, and I can see that. I think it probably would help me if we were a bit more cautious in our drafting in not making the distinction so robust as it now seems, like used in risk management and not used in risk management. Risk management, as I see it, is really an overall corporate function. And a corporate wouldn't say this part of my business is not considered as to contributing to risk management. Risk management is an overall overlay over the entire company, and it's encompassing everything that's happening. So I would think it would be very, very difficult to see a treasury function that deliberately excludes certain instruments and would not include it. I think naturally, if you are managing risk, setting aside some trading function, I think everything is probably part of risk management, whether it's particularly designated or not. But I think if you're really thoroughly engaging in risk management, there's probably no way to just say this is used or it's not used, I think. I see some people maybe disagreeing. Mary, Sue, and Jinjiao. Mary, please.
Okay, it's dangerous for me to go before Sue, but it allows her to grade the quality of my comment, which is, as you were speaking, thinking about different perspectives and definition on risk management, Andreas, what was coming to my mind is IFRS 9 and the hedge accounting model in IFRS 9. Where we talk also about the risk management function, and to the extent that we need to have some kind of boundary or definition about what is risk management, I maybe suggest that the team look at cross-referring to the IFRS 9 discussion of what, you know, what is risk management. That doesn't say that they have to be designated and documented, you know, to get the hedge accounting that follow, you know, that follows risk management activities. But we say basically when we're talking about risk management, we're talking about it in the same way as we talk about it in IFRS 9, the chapter on hedge accounting. So that's one thought, and that's a thought that's just occurred to me listening to your comments, concerns about how clear a distinction is that. So it may prove to be a bad idea, and it may be proved to be a bad idea by the next speaker. But maybe that's something for the staff to think about in terms of responding to your concern.
Thank you, Mary. Let's hear from the next speaker then, Sue.
I like to think I'm not in the market for critiquing other board members. I was going to make a different, slightly different observation. I think but also prompted by Andreas's comments and this idea that risk management's a sort of pervasive concept. And I think that's an important observation because, you know, derivatives are a very particular thing and probably aren't sort of entered into, you know, in a sort of frivolous manner by corporates because they're, you know, quite a big deal, whereas you enter into or buy financial instruments for lots of different reasons. And obviously having something which sort of comes along and adjusts the usual classifications that you're going to get from presentation is quite a big deal. And so I think following from Andreas's point, I think even if it's not designated as a sort of formal hedge accounting relationship, which is a very particular documented formal thing, we are, to your point, Andreas, I think trying to capture things where you've really, it's pretty clear that you've thought about it from a risk management perspective. Like that's your sort of, you're very consciously dealing with it with a risk management focus on it. So, you know, it's all but ready for designation for hedge accounting, but you just haven't gone that extra, you know, mile with it. I think it should be something which is almost like a conscious thing. I'm not articulating myself very well. It's not just a generic, oh, it's about risk management. I think what we're trying to focus on here, Lyra, if I understand correctly, is really things where Treasury, for example, would really have stopped and thought, actually, this instrument's really helpful because it helps me hedge this particular risk, you know, manage this particular risk I've got. So it's a much more conscious, specific risk management purpose that's attached to this particular non-derivative instrument. And I think maybe to Andreas's point, we need to perhaps make sure, if that's what you mean, Andreas, that we want to bring that out clearly in the drafting. That's what we really mean. It's not just a generic, you know, everything's to do with risk management. It's something very purposeful that's going on.
Yes and no. The question that I would then raise is, and that's something I can't answer, that probably the team want to really talk to some treasurers in corporates, how they treat this. I think there's a very fine line of saying this is part of an active pursuit of risk management, or is it rather passive? It is included in my overall risk management strategy. So if you think about a particular type of risk, like let's take FX risk, although we do have a separate paper. I think if you are concerned about foreign currency gains and losses and want to hedge, is it conceivable that you would really say, I know exactly that this business unit does have foreign exchange payables and receivables, but I consciously disregard them in my risk management? I don't think that. So I think inherently, if you are serious about risk management, I think you probably include everything.
Yeah, I guess my only hesitance is I don't necessarily disagree with you, sorry, but I think we want a real clear sort of way for people to operationalize and think about this. And so I'm keen on, I think the benefit of being quite clear that you need to be very, you know, purposeful in thinking about risk management in relation to an instrument, given there's so many financial instruments that are going to have to be thought about, I'm not sure how comfortable I am with people sort of having a loosey-goosey framework to think about where they can put things in the presentation when we're trying to be so careful with the structure of the income statement. So I guess I'm trying to balance those two thoughts.
And I acknowledge that, of course. Jin Chao, you want to come in as well.
Thanks, Andreas. Yeah, just the comments, what you made about risk management, you know, I think this is key because to distinguish those derivatives, whether they use for risk management purpose or not, whether they meet the hedging criteria, including in IFRS 9. I think it really depends. For example, if for banking industry, for those financial institutions highly regulated by regulator, maybe they have very solid risk management objective, strategic, even have separate risk management department in place. Documentation, no problem. But for non-financial entities, I really worry about whether maybe they have at high level, the board level or high level, we got risk management committee, risk management policy there, but they will not go to detail to specify what kind of assets, financial assets or liability we need to manage those risks, particularly if there are some market opportunities and the CEO, the senior management seek their opportunity to make money. I think they will step in to buy those derivatives or maybe non-derivative financial instruments. They can say, oh, it's the name of risk management, or maybe not. Sometimes it's very difficult to make judgment. And how can we require the documentation? You know, even we require, I'm not sure whether accounting standards can require or not, but or even we set some criteria, but they can easily, you know, okay, we meet those criteria or not. But this is the key. So this is why I think that in order to provide transparent information, it is possible to bring those stuff in separate, you know, category, for example, investment category, and not bring all those stuff in operating category, you know. It's maybe the nature or the risk is so different from, particularly from those non-financial entity perspective. We don't think they have very solid risk management system and documentation requirements in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Chinchao. So to probably just make my point clear, and I also said that I will be ready to support the staff recommendation. So I have no issue there. It's more around the articulation that leads to that particular treatment, where I would think be a bit more careful when it comes to non-derivative instruments that are part of risk management, because that could be fishy. Sue explained it very well, said with the derivative, it's obvious that you either are using that as a hedging instrument or that you want to trade, but with a cash instrument, I think it has multiple purposes, as you said, Lyra. And then it becomes very difficult to say, is this one or the other, right? So that's the bit where I was a bit hesitant. With that in mind, I don't see any more comments to be raised. Are we then ready to vote? So can I devote your attention to the questions after the table in paragraph 63? Are board members okay if we voted en bloc on these, or are there any concerns? So let's try whether we can get to it. So we have the staff recommendation in three parts, A, B, and C. Do board members agree with that recommendation? And can I see a show of hands, please? Okay. And to just test Bruce and Jinjiao, then which one of these three are you not happy with?
For me, it's the third one. We're talking about the not using risk management.
Yep.
For me, A and B, but C, for derivatives not used in operating category. Yeah, in operating category, I disagree. But for those derivatives related to financial activities, I agree. You know, uh-huh. So the first part, I disagree. The second part, I agree, yeah.
Okay. Just to be clear and to be helpful to the staff. Okay. I think that brings us to the end of paper 21B. Lyra, any last comments from your end?
No, just thank you.
Okay, fine. Do you just want to go on with 21C then?
Yeah, thanks. So moving on to the last paper for today, 21C provides staff analysis and recommendations relating to the proposal in the exposure draft to allocate foreign exchange differences to categories in the statement of profit or loss. In terms of feedback on these proposals, respondents agreed that classifying Forex as proposed in the exposure draft has conceptual merits and would generally provide faithful representation of the effects of the Forex on entities' financial performance. However, many respondents expressed concerns that in some cases, the costs of system enhancements to implement the proposal could exceed the benefits of the resulting information for users of financial statements. Some of these respondents suggested the board instead requires classification of Forex in a single location. This further included a few respondents who said that single location should be the financing category in order to avoid volatility in operating profit. On the other hand, fieldwork findings suggest that there are entities who currently allocate Forex in categories. Therefore, if the board were to follow the suggestion I described earlier for requiring Forex classified in a single location, it would impose change to these entities, in essence, requiring them to provide less useful information in their financial statements. In terms of user perspectives, in contrast to the respondents who were suggesting financing category as a single location to avoid volatility in operating profit, the investor perspectives highlighted in a CFA report note a contrasting view. In their view, classifying Forex outside the operating category when those that Forex in fact relates to operating profits, so say accounts receivable or payable, it is, in their view, it is considered a misrepresentation of operating profit and could reduce usefulness of operating profit as a performance measure. So considering all these comments, on balance, we recommend the board retains the proposal to require entities to classify, to allocate Forex in categories in the statement of profit or loss, because that provides useful information. But we recommend the board provides an exemption when this classification involves undue cost or effort in order to respond to these cases where the cost may be undue. Applying the approach recommended by staff, if the undue cost or effort exemption would be met, the entity would classify Forex on the item in the operating category. So with that, I'll hand over to the board to discuss and vote on question in page 12.
Thank you, Lyra. Can I invite board members' comments, please? Tadeo.
Thank you, Andreas. I see that people just wait for this, the first one to speak and see how it goes. Let's go for the warm-up. Well, I have some doubt about whether the undue cost or effort on this type of income and expenses affects gain losses, because it's so pervasive. I would really like to see how it would work in practice. But I think the idea is good. Just thinking whether this is operationally possible or not. But my main comment, and then I would support anyway the staff in this regard. I'm just having some, I think that we should think about whether this will be operationally or not. But my main comment here is in relation to the feedback described in paragraph 9A. Where some respondents said that a trade receivable, just gave an example, in foreign currency that is managed together with borrowings on the same currency. But following the proposals, the foreign exchange gains and losses would be classified in different categories. I acknowledge the comments from the CFA, for example, paragraph 15. I also acknowledge the comment from the staff that allowing this classification based on the way the entity manages FX gain losses would be inconsistent with the board's general approach to classification of income and expenses in the categories in the statement of profit or loss. But I think this is specific feedback from the preparers sound fair and consistent with other potential classifications we are actually envisaging in our proposal. For example, the concept of main business, and we have just a long conversation about risk management on non-derivatives. And when we follow a rationale for classifying, for example, interest income and expense within the operating category, where otherwise would be classified within financing or even the classification of gain loss on derivatives. I think that it's fair, again, the comments that these preparers made. I know this is neither approach A or B, but is more consistent with the feedback from preparers, and it does not seem to be offensive to users, provided this is well disclosed. I partially support the staff recommendation of for approach A, but I would like a or A1, as I would prefer to allow a classification in case this is consistent with the entity's way of managing these FX differences. I don't want to leave a door open, but let the statement of financial performance a bit more consistent with the way entity manages its risk. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeo. Nick, please.
Thank you. So I think users are often perplexed when they see these amounts. If you ask users about Forex differences, they often immediately think about what's the Forex impact on revenue rather than what we're talking about here, which are translation amounts. And part of the reasons why they're perplexed by them is that, you know, either they don't see them, they're not on the face, they're hidden away quite often, or they appear in different categories for different entities. There's a degree of uncertainty about these, I think, in many users' minds. Equally, they have limited predicted value. I think that's what most people conclude. If I'm going to forecast this going forward, I'm probably going to forecast it at zero, would be my best guess. And in that respect, I'm not so much in the CFA camp myself. I understand where they're coming from, but I don't feel so strongly about it. I do feel there is merit in allocating these to the underlying categories, however. And clearly, we know there are many entities that are able to do that already, and certainly we shouldn't stop them doing that. I think that would be a retrograde step to suddenly say these all have to be in one place, even you're doing what was our starting position of allocating either to operating, investing or financing as appropriate. So we are left then, or I'm left with a choice between do we allow an accounting option or undue cost and efforts, because I appreciate some other entities simply aren't in a position to do that and may not be for the foreseeable future. On balance, I probably do come down to the undue cost or effort option as the get out clause. I think there is some, given our default would be operating under those circumstances, there may be some incentive for preparers to, let's say, modernize their systems so they are able to allocate them within time. So I say this has often a murky area for investors, partly because of the way that these items are either presented or disclosed today. So I think having something that is more uniform, but accepting the reality of where preparers are at the moment is really what the staff recommendation hits on. So I'm happy to support that.
Thank you, Nick. Let's hear from the other user, Zach.
So I am largely in agreement with the staff position for many of the reasons Nick laid out. I do think that the best course is to classify these in the appropriate categories, but clearly there's evidence that we need to allow for some sort of exemption, and I think the undue cost or effort is the right route. Just to reiterate one point that Nick did cover is the invisibility of these to most users of financial statements in most circumstances, with the knowledge that from their job and their function in terms of forecasting, most would do exactly what Nick described, which is bring them to zero. So the importance for the preparer community of highlighting these as something that investors would like to know and frequently don't have information.
Thank you. Bertrand? Sorry, Jianzhao was first, and then Bertrand.
Thanks, Andrew. First of all, I appreciate your staff address the concern, particularly about the cost and the system change challenges arising from our proposal included in the exposure draft. And then we introduced undue cost or efforts. But I think that whether introducing undue cost or effort will really resolve the issues or concerns arising from stakeholders, I think I have thought it. So my personal view is that actually I prefer single location approach or provide an option, for those companies who, manage those foreign currency denominated financial assets together with, those foreign currency denominated borrowing together in order to achieve some kind of natural hedging. I think at least this would be consistent with those companies' current practice, current assets management, assets and liability management or risk management, practice, at least provide this kind of option. So this is why I agree. I prefer the single location approach. I think firstly that I really look at the nature of foreign currency differences. What's that? I think foreign currency differences reflect the financial risk, not operating risk. So particularly, even we can argue that some of the foreign currency or receivables arising from revenue generation activities. But once I receive the money, once I got the a receivable recognized, that is not linked to the revenue generated activities. That is simply the money comprised. It's similar as the money I borrow from bank or others. It's the foreign currency, or it's the foreign currency dominated receivables, and those assets are financial assets. So they have the nature of financing rather than operating. So this is the first point. Second point is that I think it would be single location and have those location be in the category of financing category would be consistent with the underlying concept we developed it, we included in IS-23. IS-23 would typically mention that foreign exchange differences, at least some of foreign exchange differences, could be a component of interest cost. I think the nature of the foreign currency differences in different standards should be the same. So I also think that this should be consistent with that standard, even would be consistent with what we have discussed about interest income and interest expenses about agenda paper A. That is part of them, part of the interest cost. And certainly, as I mentioned, that single location or at least a provide option would be consistent with those companies, current risk management or asset liability management practice, particularly for those large group. They call it central treasury department in place to manage all those foreign currencies together. I'm not sure if we develop this proposal, even we introduce undue cost efforts, maybe they still need to test. And they need to allocate those foreign currency differences into different currency, different categories first, and then to test whether it will meet the undue cost or effort. And secondly, if not, they need to allocate all those foreign currency differences in the operating category. I think it may not, because this is the Treasury Department, they regard this as financial activities, financial management activities rather than operating activities. And thirdly, if the foreign currency differences simply arising from currency, money, not receivables or borrowings, I really agree with what the point made by Bontrant before about cash inference, because they hold those foreign currency as you know, needs a short term, you know, shortage of those cashes. So they will regard this is a financing activity rather than operating activity. So if all those foreign currency differences go to operating currency category, I'm not sure it really faithfully represents the economics of those differences. So with those reasons, I think that I prefer single allocation in the financial category. If not, I would like to provide some kind of option for those companies really to faithfully represent their activities. Thank you.
Thank you, Jinjiao. Lira, you wanted to come in and ask a question.
Yeah, thanks, Jinjiao. I guess I wanted to understand and confirm whether I hear your comment correctly. When you think of financing category, you mentioned financial, so the translation of financial assets and financial liabilities. Because I think I would typically think of financing category as a link to financial liabilities, but not financial assets. So are you thinking all Forex in financing category for both translation of financial assets and financial liabilities, or are you thinking of maybe following the logic of financial liabilities would be in financing category and for financial assets, it would be split between operating and safe investing?
I think to make the story as simple as possible, I would like to bring those financial assets and liability together in the financial category. One of the reasons I think I really support the point made by Bertrand before, if those companies simply hold those foreign currency, you know, currency, this is the financial assets. But I would like those foreign currency, currency differences to be in the financial category rather than investing or in operating category. If those companies got receivables, I think normally receivables are short-term period. They will collect money very shortly. So I also think that do not need to provide an exception, you know, just simply bring those stuff in the financial category to have the story as simple as possible. If we needed detailed information, maybe additional disclosure could help. Yeah, but basically, I would like to have those foreign, you know, exchange differences to be in the financial category.
Thanks for clarifying. I guess Anne will know this better, but if we were to do that, I think the approach just agreed for financing category, it would be inconsistent, because I think in that spectrum, we are only talking about things going to financing category for financial liabilities, not for financial assets.
Yes, that would be right. I mean, the board decided in May, I think, that, you know, it didn't want to take income and expenses from cash and cash equivalents into financing. And for me, it would seem quite strange to create a separate rule for FX differences. I quite like the clean cut that we've got between, you know, liabilities, income and expenses on liabilities are in financing, and income and expenses from assets are either operating or investing.
Can I add, yeah. If we would like to have conceptually consistent and right, I prefer those, for example, the foreign currency differences arising from receivables to be included in investing category as this, and rather than operating.
Tom nodding. Can we have Bertrand and Bruce, please? Bertrand.
I can just reiterate my previous comments on the fact that for some preparers, effectively, the proposals there won't have any impact, except following Jin Chao's comments on cash and cash equivalent, the reclassification from financing to investing of the effects related to those eventually. But for some, and I can remark that those preparers that won't be impacted are those that today presents a P&L by function of expenses. Those that presents a P&L by nature of expenses, they generally classify FX on a unique category. From my experience, so it's not what my previous employer was doing, but we were presenting a P&L by function of expenses, so we were allocating by category. But I know by discussions, notably in France, that effectively those that present today the FX differences in a single category are those presenting a P&L by nature of expenses, and it's generally in financing. So it's requiring them to allocate is as if you were bringing by on this typical subject is as if you're requesting them to incorporate some elements of by function of expenses into a follow-up of the P&L by nature of expenses. So you're asking them to, in a way, to disaggregate by function of expenses within a statement of income that is presented by nature. So it's an additional burden, and I think in this instance, the proposal A is probably an acceptable one for those. And if I may, a last comment on the predictability of effects. Yeah, we have not yet found any powerful crystal ball that can enable preparers to fully estimate what will be the future evolution of FX currencies in the next 5 years, which is generally the horizon of a business plan. So, yes, it will depend. The assumptions really will depend on whether you have reasonable evidence coming from research departments of the banks you're working with that an FX may evolve in a very near future, whereby effectively you may depart from just reasoning on a constant currency basis to predict your future, and notably your budget, let's put it that way, so your future P&L expenses and income or cash flows. But if not, effectively, you will reason generally on a constant currency basis. And last comment also, generally, there is a non-GAAP measure that is provided in the MD&A report on top of the GAAP measures, which generally is always a presentation on a constant currency basis. So, of course, it's comparison of actuals figures and not of forecasted figures. But still, the users generally get a comparison of the FX impacts on the P&L and cash flows of the years where the results are presented. So it's generally an additional, not all companies do that, but some many do that, obviously.
Thank you, Bertrand. And Bruce, please.
Thanks, Andreas. So, yeah, again, I've kind of got a bit of a challenge with this one, because I think the problem I've got is that conceptually what's in the proposal is right. I mean, I think if any of us sat with our hand or heart, splitting FX is conceptually 100% right. Put it into the category, see what impacts, it sounds great. The challenge I've got, of course, is on the practicality. And I think that's what we're trying to address here, saying, look, we accept what we know is conceptually right all the way. But then again, the other side, we've got to make sure people can actually implement the standards. Now, I remember I was involved in the discussions at the joint GPF and the CMAC meeting around this topic. And what interested me was from a lot of the preparers from the group I was involved in, I remember a lot of them saying that they had a big concern around the practicality of this. What I also remember was that from the users who were in the group I was involved with, there wasn't a massively strong feeling. I mean, the guys were saying, you know, it would be nice, but it wasn't something they sat there going, this would make this the holy grail of standards. So I guess from what I remember, it could be different to what other people do, this wasn't something that was so crucial to them. So I guess the reality is we've got a situation where this is conceptually the right answer. We're looking for the compromise. Now, the question we're really asking here in approach A and B is how far do we go? Do we go all the way to B, which says, look, we're going to give these guys the ability to choose because we accept this is going to be big, or do we put in a cost benefit? If I had to go between the two, clearly I'm going to go with A because I think A is going to actually result in the situation where people aren't going to do anything different. I think the reality is when I think of a lot of the large groups I've worked with, they're not going to be able to split these things. They're managing these things centrally most situations. They're getting most of their FX as kind of, you know, it's being managed on a global basis. You sit and tell these guys now that they need to start splitting this up between the categories and where it's come from and what's going from. Most of these guys are going to look at you and go, there is just no way we can do that. And my feeling is going to be that the hurdle in which they have to cross to get the cost benefits not going to be that high. Because I think even from the auditors and the regulators, they're going to look at this and say, fair enough, we can see you doing that. So interestingly, I think this is actually something that I think is going to be a lot more punitive on smaller businesses than larger businesses, because I think the larger businesses very easily are going to be able to overcome that. So I guess if we were going for the proposals, look, I like the idea of being in the different categories. Do I think it could all sit in one category? If we got the right message, yes, I'd have put it all in one category, because I think at the end of the day, that would be what the majority of people I've had experience of are doing. And I think that when we talk about some people have been splitting it out, I really believe those are going to be in the minority at the moment. So this is going to be a big change for preparers, and I think we need to be conscious of that. But if we had to do anything, I think from a practical point of view, I think B, an accounting policy decision to me probably goes a little bit too far. I would probably go with A, or if everybody else felt the other way, into one category. But yeah, of the two that were presented to us in the paper, I would most likely have gone with A if I had to pick one. Thank you.
Thank you. Jinjiao, you wanted to come back.
Yeah, just the first, as I mentioned before, also as I agree with what Bruce said, that conceptually, obviously, allocate everything to in different category, it could be justified, but we have to think about a practical solution. If we look at, I also heard concerns when I conducted outreach activities with preparers, and they really have many concerns about the additional costs added to them, particularly if the current practice did not allocate them, and there are no concern from users' perspective. And some larger group companies, they have maybe more than 100 subsidiaries in different countries. Now they needed to allocate those foreign currency, foreign exchange differences into different categories. And sometimes they manage those foreign currency risk at the group level. But the problem is that different subsidiaries may allocate those foreign currency difference in different category. And at the group level, they need to make adjustment to move to one category to another category. So I think this is one advantage why I prefer one allocation. Do not need to mobilize those numbers, you know, into different categories simply because of level of the consolidation. And in the end, maybe users don't care too much about different categories. bid you to look at the total number of the foreign currency, the foreign exchange differences. They would like to know how the group, how the company manages the risk arising from foreign exchange, you know, exchanges. So this is, I think, that users are particularly interested in. So so I really have sympathy if we go, you know, about we need to think about the cost and the benefits, cost-benefit balances. And come back to previous the comments I made, I say if conceptual consistently, I prefer those financial assets, the foreign exchange difference arising from foreign financial assets to be included investing category. But personally, I still prefer to be included in the financial category, just to simply provide some kind of exception for those companies focus on this particular case, because we also made some exception in other categories as well. So to make the story as simple as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Jinchao. And recap, please.
Yes, thank you. I thought this recommendation again and again, and finally I decided to support the staff recommendation because application of undue cost and effort exemption can be judgmental and also depend on the fact and the circumstance, like how the company structure their system within the group companies, or how they maintain their information within the system. So it's not depend on the size of the company. It's really depend on the individual company's situation. So based on my experience that I supported one company's implementation of the new system, tracing the Forex data down to classify one category or more than one category as required in ED is a kind of the things they have to determine when they decide the initial design of the IT system. And what I heard from the vendor of that system provider was that design decision is kind of irreversible. So once they determine, then they will not be able to modify that part of the decision and then also the outcome of the things within the system. So until the entity decide to implement a new system, they will not be able to modify their own system. So yeah, if that is the case, maybe smaller company might be more easily to adjust the data received from the subsidiary, but that also might require the manual exercise. So I think it's really difficult decision we were going to ask the practice to consider about the application of the undue cost or effort. So that is the reason I was a bit reluctant to support the staff decisions. But considering the user's need and also try to balancing the all the effort of the entity, I think if I compare retaining today's diversity as it is in the future and to realize more consistent classification over time, maybe I will choose, even though it might take time, to narrow down the whole diversity about the classification, but still consistent classification will help the user and other stakeholders in the market. So I decided to support the staff's recommendation.
Thank you, Rika. Having listened to the entire discussion, I must say you haven't made my life a bit easier. I came in into this paper with a clear signal of support. I'm now a bit more hesitant, and the reason for that is probably because nobody that I've heard speaking denies the conceptual purity of this approach. I think we are all in agreement that ideally the FX effects should be tied to the item that gave rise to the currency risk. I think what makes me pause a bit is the idea of tying that classification to, again, the question of risk management or FX management in this case. Because that, I think, adds another dimension that we cannot really depict. So once we have really subclassified into individual categories, if you want to see what is the net effect of my FX management, you probably would need some note disclosures that pulls that all together again. You could also go the other way around and follow Jin Zhao's approach and say put everything in one category in the on the face of the statement, but then provide disclosure and give rise to how much of that relates to operating, financing, or investing. I'm not sure that by that approach we can really meet every person's expectations here. And I completely agree with the comments that Jin Zhao, Bertrand and Bruce have made in terms of conceptually, I think we agree. The question is, what does make most sense in order to achieve what? And there I'm not so sure as I was before I came into this session, having heard all the comments and the arguments. Also, if I go back to the beginning of this discussion, I think Tadeo suggested an approach A prime in saying, is there a way that we could add an option for companies to choose a presentation that follows their kind of risk management? And again, he was bringing in that risk management function. That's being balanced by Bruce's comment and saying, I wouldn't go as far to say give an accounting policy option. So I'm wondering here as to the nuances that board members have expressed. I think I appreciate all of these comments, but I'm unsure at this stage as to how we can really strike a balance. I mean, you could say the lowest common denominator would always be to revert to the staff recommendation, right? Because everyone has said this is from a conceptual purity approach, this is the most sensible answer. But how do we then address the practicability point that several board members have made? That's the bit that I'm unsure. So I'm happy to vote, have you voted on this paper, but I'm not sure whether the result would really achieve what we want to achieve. Any views on that from anyone in the group, perhaps also from the staff? Mary, please.
You know, Andreas, I'm coming in quickly, so maybe I'm jumping too fast, but I think I come back to saying I support the staff recommendation because I think what our exploration has shown is that there's no perfect answer, and it isn't for lack of trying. And at a certain point, I think we just have to say we're making a decision. You know, we've heard Nick, Zach, and I think at least one other board member saying these are at times invisible figures. And one of the things that I think will be helpful is that hopefully we'll give more visibility. And I think we are acknowledging the, you know, as you said, I think we're pretty comfortable with the conceptual preferences. But I think adding, and this is good piece of thought by the staff, the undue cost and effort relief translates the conceptual preference into an operational one as well that we'll cope with, as Rika said, perhaps a long period of getting to a greater degree of comparability. So overall, I'd say I think we can see if there's enough support for the staff recommendation, and I wouldn't take this, the debate and the different views we've had as qualifiers for that, but rather just, you know, us doing our job supported by the staff in terms of weighing all the different considerations about whether this is the right way to go.
Thank you, Mary. That's certainly helpful. And please, and Taco.
Thanks, Andreas. Yeah, I would take this to board vote in the way it's written now. I think it reflects a change by the staff based on feedback. So what we put out for consultation was something that we felt was appropriate, that is, taking the Forex to the category of the underlying transaction. But we did get really clear feedback about certain difficulties that NTCs would have. And I think the staff have come back. They've examined the various things that have been discussed by people. But I think where they are in their recommendation is the right response when we consider everything that we've had to think about post the ED. So I would support the staff recommendation and I would support voting on it as is.
Thank you. And Aida, please.
Thank you. And I'm not going to sit here and say the staff response is right, of course, because Anne has just kindly said that. But I just want to just reiterate that it is really balanced recommendation we have made here, considering all these factors. And, you know, that's perhaps, Andreas, why you describe it as lowest common denominator. And just to comment, because it is really appealing when we read, you know, the paragraphs you quoted from the feedback that this is sometimes used for Forex risk management, and that is really not reflected in how these proposals apply. And this is something we have considered probably more in the run-up for the exposure draft than now. And considering that just made us convinced how complex it would be to reflect that, because you can say, okay, the case of offsetting receivables with payables is quite simple. Why can't we just bundle them up together? But you have, you know, many more situations where this happens. For example, when you manage your Forex risk by taking loans in different currency, and then with loans in different currency, you also have interest expense that depends on this Forex. And we would never say put interest expense in operating because that liability is taken in different currency because my, you know, revenue is in that currency, for example. So you would never get, I think back to what Mary said, you would never get this matched perfectly. We can just decide how far down we want to go in making this more and more complex. And I'm just personally getting concerned by layers and layers we are adding in general. And I think you made that point earlier today, Andreas, that, you know, we just need to be cautious not to over-engineer, recognizing that, you know, this is, I'm not going to say just primary financial statements, of course, very important key point for investors as a starting point. But investors who really want to understand Forex are not going to stop here. They're going to go and look at IFRS 7 disclosures to understand really what's going on. The face P&L is never going to tell the whole story about this, no matter what we do.
Fair comment, and thanks for reminding me to stand by my own principles that I have asked others to comply with. With that, I'm prepared to ask the question that's in the paper and see whether board members can support the staff recommendation. Can I see a show of hands, please?
Andreas, Lira wanted to add something.
Sure.
Andreas, Lira wanted to add something. Oh. It's okay. 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 Yeah.
Lira, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry about that.
So some are voting. Do you want to say something before we vote or after? I mean, the voting seems
I guess, to be, yeah, yeah. Apologies. I think I just wanted to this concern about is it going to be a change in practice? And I think just having the benefit of going through the feedback and the review of the financial statements that we did for a sample, I would anticipate that in some cases, the change may not necessarily come from a company that used to allocate everything, used to classify everything in one single category, and now will need to classify it in different categories. Sometimes I think the change will come from just changing that category. For example, we encountered entities who classify all FX in financing category, but when they provide information to what item they are exposed on to foreign currency risk, they clearly state that most of their exposure, if not all, comes from things like sales or purchases. And I think in cases like that, you would almost anticipate that the change in applying our proposal would may very well be this one single category. It will just be not the financing category, it will be the operating, because that is reflective of their exposure to foreign currency risk being related to their operating activities. So I think there's also this principle of the requirement would ask entities to step and think which category is more aligned to what I'm actually exposed to foreign currency risk.
Okay, thank you for bringing this up. Then I would revert to my previous suggestion that we vote on the staff recommendation as drafted. And can I see a show of hands as to who would support that, please?
I have 11.
Okay. That is certainly sufficient for the staff in order to progress. And sorry for having made your life a bit harder by fleshing out that discussion, but I think it is good that we actually are considering the feedback and really dwell on the comments there and bring them to the fore. But I don't want the meeting to drag any longer. I thank you very much for your contributions over these hours, both today and yesterday. And thereby I close the ISB only part of the July meeting, wishing you a good afternoon, evening, night, and we will see each other again on Friday for the joint education session with ISB. Thank you very much.